the camp of Vice President Lenny Robredo, unfazed by the Iglesia Ni Cristo's endorsement of the Marcos-Duterte tandem. We'll tackle the INC's block voting with sociologist Dr. Jail Cornelio. Misamis Occidental and Pilar in Abra placed under Carmelite control due to security concerns. Human Rights Watch calls for the immediate release of detained Senator Laila De Lima following the retraction made by two witnesses in her cases. And authorities vow to strictly enforce President Duterte's order to stop online cockfighting. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. The cap of presidential aspirant Vice President Lenny Robredo, unfazed by the endorsement given by religious group Iglesia Ni Cristo to rival Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and his running mate Sara Duterte Carpio. See, the INC, which has millions of followers around the world, is known to vote as a bloc. But Robredo's team says they are not overly concerned with this. They point out Marcos also got the backing of INC in the 2016 polls, but he was still beaten by Robredo.
We respect the decision. It's always the choice of any group, religious or not, to support a particular candidate. In the same way that we have received the support of certain other groups from the Catholic Church, for example. We expected this, and in 2016, despite the endorsement of our rival candidate, BB Lenny was able to pull off a victory. So, it's something we respect. It's something we expected, but it's not something we are overly concerned with.
Meanwhile, the camp of another presidential hopeful, Senator Manny Pacquiao, is relying on the vote of other Christian organizations.
The support of the Body of Christ, which we believe number about, at this moment, we are estimating is about 14 million population here in the Philippines. So we're expecting perhaps about half from them to generate votes for us. In my estimate, we have 80% of the Christian vote for 2022. Brother Eddie Villanueva is backing us up completely.
An analyst says historically the block vote of Iglesia Ni Cristo is considered solid and boosts the campaign of the endorsed candidate. But Dindo Manhit of Strat-based ADR Institute says this endorsement can still be negated by other blocks of the Catholic Church. He also warned Iglesia Ni Cristo against using its influence for political gain.
It's not also good really when a religious group uses its influence towards its followers. And some would say they're not being forced, but I know for a fact in my conversation through the years as a political observer that the followers of the church looks at this as important to their faith. This has been discerned by their leaders. But when you turn it into a political tool, that's where the danger is. When you use this endorsement and gain patronage from this, this might not be good for Philippine democracy because it creates a situation whereby a certain church and a state works together.
And for more on the significance and history of the Iglesia Ni Cristo's block voting, we're now joined by sociologist Dr. Jail Cornelio. Dr. Cornelio is also the director of the Development Studies Program of the Ateneo de Manila University. Dr. Cornelio, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate you coming to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ms. Carmina. It's good to be here.
All right. So let's begin our discussion. Give us the historical perspective here. How does the INC block vote differ from all the endorsements that we've seen, both present and in the past, of other sectors, be it religious or otherwise? Dr. Cornelio.
Good. That's a great question to begin our conversation with. Religious endorsements by default do not translate into religious voting. That's certainly true for many religious groups in the country, whether it's Catholic Church or evangelicals, you know, as even if some pastors, right, that they could rally their people behind a certain candidate or two. But this is quite different when it comes to the Iglesia Ni Cristo, because we know that at least 70% of Iglesia members would adhere to the endorsements of their religious leaders. We saw this already in 2010, 77% of INC voters voted for Noynoy Aquino, who was endorsed obviously by INC at that time. And then in 2016, about 70% or so also adhere to the endorsement of the Iglesia Ni Cristo leadership. So we see that this is consistent. It's not 100%, but 70% is still 70%, and it can make or break, especially close fight in the election.
Give us the background here, or the inside story, as to why it's important for Iglesia Ni Cristo to publicly endorse these candidates. Why is it important for the church? Why is it important for the politicians? Why is it important for their flock?
Wonderful. These are wonderful questions, Ms. Carmina. Okay, there are at least two or three ways to approach these questions. Number one, theologically speaking, I think for the Iglesia Ni Cristo leadership and for any INC member, it all boils down to what they believe is their calling to be united as a church, and they would quote certain verses to argue their case. We see that all the time, you know, on whatever issue that you might think of. The whole idea of pagkakaisa, pakikiisa dun sa punong ministro, and we see this all the time, especially in the elections. You know, that's where the unity, sociologically speaking, really uniformity more than it is unity, is manifested. And there are theological reasons for that. But the other reason, I think, and this is where we can be a little more critical about their position when it comes to block voting. I feel that this is really about building alliances for a minority religion like the Iglesia Ni Cristo. Historically speaking, we know that that has been the case. It's very useful for any minority religion, to be honest. It doesn't just have to be Iglesia Ni Cristo, to be allied with those already in power. And we know that the Iglesia Ni Cristo throughout the 20th century suffered many instances of persecution, sometimes political, in most cases really political, and in other cases really religious discrimination as well. So being allied with a politician, somebody in power, can protect their own interests as well, especially with respect to land and property and so forth. But the other thing that I also wanted to say, why this is important for us to analyze and critically assessed, is that Iglesia Ni Cristo is no longer your typical minority religion with no voice in the political and public spheres. Iglesia Ni Cristo, after celebrating more than 100 years of existence, we know is an affluent religious group, and its members are quite influential in different sectors of society. So now we don't only see it as a political alliance building, but also as an assertion of its presence in Philippine society. Certainly there's politics to it, certainly there's economics to it, but certainly also there's a religious dimension to it, you know, attracting more people who will join.
But here's where it becomes quite tricky. They have made endorsements in the past, and some have asserted that some of these endorsements were of candidates with questionable history, questionable past. So one would have to ask, where do the teachings end as foundation for their beliefs and their religion? And, you know, where does the building of alliances begin? When does that take over?
Fantastic. This is exactly the question that we should also be asking ourselves, not as outsiders, but certainly also a question that maybe INC members should be asking themselves as well. One objection that I have when it comes to endorsements like this is that for the most part, they revolve around personalities, individuals, more than they do around issues or character or the traits of this person or what this person personifies or embodies. And we've seen this again, you know, at least in the statement that we saw in the news, we didn't really see any justification why it's a Christian duty to support Bongbong Marcos or Sara Duterte or any candidate for that matter, you know, if they decided to choose somebody else. most of the time it revolves around personalities. I think it would have been much more responsible for any religious group to present their case. And that is also, I don't think there's any answer, concrete answer to your question insofar as really where do you draw the line between your morals and your need to build political alliances, because I think for organizations like Iglesia Ni Cristo, both are, all these considerations are very important. You need allies as a minority religion, but the other question, I suppose, is something that they should also present to the public sphere. Why is it Christian? Why is it Christian duty to support candidates like this? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, what I think I find unfortunate in the conversations about this is that it's always the theology of unity that we hear from these religious groups, that we need to be united, we need to have a united front, and so forth. But that doesn't seem to be enough in the context of a plural democracy like the Philippines.
But then you also hear of those who belong to the religious group being very vocal on social media, saying that this might be the endorsement of the church, but this is my vote, and I'm sticking with it. So how do you explain that?
There might be a generational dimension to this, Ms. Carmina. Most of the time, you know, the people who are willing to contest, to challenge the leadership tend to be young people. This is not new. We've seen this also in 2016, certainly in 2016, and we've seen anonymous, posts, you know, on social media about, an INC member who's sticking her head out there, so to speak, you know, to challenge the leadership. There is a generational dimension to that. But I would like to also ask us to be cautious a little bit about this, because I feel that this is really the minority. If we stand by the statistics, we know that 77%, you know, 2010 is the adherence rate. Time will tell, you know, what the adherence rate might be on May 9th, but I feel that these are the voices of the minority.
Mm. But make no mistake about it, Dr. Cornelio, whatever these members choose, it's very apparent to whoever candidate they decided to support at the end of the day. It is very apparent in all those posts that I've seen, at least, that they still go back to the teachings of the church as a foundation for arriving at that decision.
And that much is very clear to us, you know, at least what we are seeing from the defenders, you know, of the organization. And I think it all really boils down to unity. And from a sociological perspective, that unity translates to electoral uniformity.
Mm. But historically speaking, we only need to look back at the 2016 results in the vice presidential race.
Yeah.
Have these endorsements really delivered the promise of the votes for these candidates? Go ahead, doctor.
This is an interesting conversation. The conventional wisdom used to be that the INC could make a difference in tight races, all right? Maybe for certain senators, maybe for certain, you know, certain periods in time. But that seemed to have been, what happened in 2016 seemed to have been really to challenge that conventional wisdom. So in other words, it doesn't necessarily ensure victory for any candidate to be endorsed by the INC. Mm. Now, the thing, though, is that if we stand by the surveys, we know that Bongbong is one step closer to the presidency, and the INC endorsement would not really make any huge dent on making that victory evident on my end.
But do we know enough about the whole process that they involve into arriving at these endorsements? I know several years back you had former Senator Jamie Ejercito saying that, giving a glimpse actually as to how that process takes place. I don't know exactly if that is true. Obviously, I'm not an insider, but if you know, would you know how the process is? And is it also made public to their followers, to the members of the church?
What we only hear from INC members is that They believe that enough consultation has been done, enough process has been carried out to do this. In my previous work with INC leaders, and they've been very cordial to me, and they're very helpful to my previous projects with them, about them. They said, you know, that consultation is really part of the process, talking to people on the ground, assessing also the sentiment of their people. But on the other hand, we also know that much of the conversations also take place at the level of the leadership, mm-hmm. and sometimes with the candidates themselves. We know that candidates do carry the favors of INC leaders, and we know that it takes a long time, months and months before the elections. So I think it's a complex process that involves a lot of negotiations and you know, one step forward, maybe two steps back.
You also said a while ago that there's a generational mm-hmm. dimension to this, even though, yeah. as you said, it's quite a minority belief still at this point. And you also mentioned a while ago that when you look at the history of the INC, it will begin with persecution and then survival. But now we see them as a formidable force. So do you take this now as sort of, or do you see this as part of the evolution of the INC, that now that they're a formidable force, that they can actually also begin to let their decision-making process evolve and allow other factors in, and not necessarily just root it on the survival aspect and the history of persecution, Doctor?
Yeah, to be honest, that could be it, really. I mean, I would love to see an Iglesia Ni Cristo that is far more engaged in public conversation. And they know, and they have read some of my writings, my position about this. I feel that Iglesia Ni Cristo is no longer just a national religion. You know, obviously, you know, you go wherever in the country and you find these local chapels, and they're the neo-Gothic architecture, and they're the marker. They're markers of Iglesia Ni Cristo's national presence. But since celebrating their 100th anniversary in 2014, we know that the Iglesia Ni Cristo is really now a global religion. In some of my previous writings, I'm even calling it a world religion. Not because they are everywhere Filipinos are. That could be the case for other religious groups. But for Iglesia Ni Cristo, they're actively converting even people of other nationalities. Speaking to them in their own languages and getting them trained here in the Philippines to become ministers themselves. Mm. So it's a very different calculus now for Iglesia Ni Cristo as a global religion. Mm. Now, the question, of course, is whether as a global religion, Iglesia Ni Cristo can also participate in the public sphere like any other civil society organization. Some religious groups do that. Some Catholic groups do that. Some evangelical groups do that. They debate, they participate in conversations about who might be the best candidate for president, for example. I wish that could be, you know, that I hope that would be the next step in the evolution of Iglesia Ni Cristo.
So how can that be beneficial to them? They were able to reach this point, right?
Yeah.
Decades,
without any of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Decades into their existence, a century into their existence, without engaging. So why should there be this point now for that evolution that you speak of?
Because it is about credibility. At the end of the day, even though Iglesia Ni Cristo is still is already the global religion that we know it to be, the reality is that many people still find Iglesia Ni Cristo to be suspicious, you know, very dodgy in certain places. We know what happened in 2015. We know the factions within the Iglesia Ni Cristo, and it tends to be very secretive and so forth, you know. But as a major religious player in Philippine society, I think it would be to the advantage of Iglesia Ni Cristo or any emerging religious group for that matter, Ms. Carmina, to be publicly accessible, publicly accountable, whenever it makes important statements like this. It's useful. Sorry?
Yeah, go ahead. Just finish your talk.
Yeah. So in the end, it's not only useful for the Philippine society, for Filipinos to understand them better, but it's also useful for the organization to establish their credibility before, you know, for out to outside.
Of course, you're talking about the INC now because of the endorsement that was made public 24 hours ago. But make no mistake about it. As you said, there are other religious groups who have made endorsements as well. Big groups, small groups. Let's even bring in the business groups here. But then I want to focus on the presence of religion. We're just counting days here. Yung iba na nga, Dr. Cornelio, hindi na nakakatulog. Nagkakaroon na ng anxiety attack. As we count down the days to May 9th. But make no mistake about it, religion plays a huge part in a Filipino's life. But in that voting precinct, in that booth, when you're when you are alone with your thoughts and your conscience, how big of a role will religion play as you cast your vote come election day?
Wow. Tough question. Yeah. It really depends on how effective the organization of the church or the religious group has been in forming the conscience of its own people. In some cases, the formation of conscience is only at the level of fear. Oh, no, I need to vote according to the endorsements of my leaders because I feel that I might be sinning against God. I might be sinning at committing treason against my religious organization for not towing the line. We hear that all the time. But on the other hand, we also know that religion can be very useful in forming conscientious decisions about the elections. We see that not just with the Catholic Church, but certainly with progressive evangelical groups as well that are far more bothered now by what they see as historical denialism, distortions, and all the fake news in favor of somebody who seems to be suspicious in character. That could be that, and we see that too, being influential. But having said all of that, I don't want to romanticize the role of religion here. For many other people, political choices are also pragmatic decisions. You know, what benefits, which candidate would be very useful with respect to the needs of our community, who has been there for us, and it really all goes back to political patronage and rent seeking.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. We've run out of time. I wish I could talk to you some more. I'm hoping that I could talk to you post-election day as we wait for the next president of this country. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Jayil Cornelio there. He's a sociologist of religion. He's also director of development studies program of the Ateneo de Manila University. Thanks again, Dr. Cornelio, for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Maraming salamat, Ms. Carmina. Please get a good rest.
You too. All right, moving on. A group of Filipino priests backs a tandem of Vice President Leni Robredo and her running mate, Senator Kiko Pangilinan. Our correspondent, Ara Perez, now joins us with more on this. Ara, go ahead.
Carmina, the clergy for the Moral Choice, which is composed of about 1,400 bishops, priests, and deacons nationwide, is backing the presidential bid of Vice President Leni Robredo and her running mate, Senator Kiko Pangilinan, for the May 2022 polls. For the group, their discernment and consideration of track record, Robredo and Pangilinan are servant leaders, even in their private lives, as they showed compassion and helped different sectors and have not been involved in any anomaly. Monsignor Mel David said during previous elections, the Catholic Church has not been vocal about its choice for candidates and just opted to give qualifications of public servants. But because of the current landscape of politics, David said active participation is needed as this is a fight between good and evil. Meanwhile, June Cruz from the Sangguniang Laico ng Pilipinas said if there's a Catholic vote to be delivered, this will be a vote for the common good. But following their endorsement of the Robredo-Pangilinan tandem, priests from the Clergy for the Moral Choice said they will not use the Holy Mass or sacraments to campaign for anyone. Instead, they will conduct house-to-house campaigns and actively post on their social media accounts. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ara Perez, there joining us on the line. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, the Human Rights Watch calls on the Philippine government to immediately drop the drug cases against detained Senator Laila de Lima. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. you're still with Dateline Philippines, here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Campo Vice President Lenny Robredo unfazed by the Iglesia Ni Cristo's endorsement of the Marcos Duterte tandem. Misamis Occidental and Pilar in Abra placed under Comelec control due to security concerns. Human Rights Watch calls for the immediate release of detained Senator Laila de Lima following the retraction made by two witnesses in her cases. And authorities vow to strictly enforce President Duterte's order to stop online cockfighting. Presidential candidate Faisal Mangondato vows to prioritize the agriculture sector should he win the race for Malacañang. Speaking at the Comelec panel interviews, Mangondato said pushing for reforms in the sector will not only help farmers but also promote food security and economic recovery of the country. He wants government to rely or not to rely too much on importation since the Philippines is an agricultural country.
Hindi lang tayo uutang ng mga doon sa mga foreign bank dahil yan ay mas lalong nagigipit ang ating bayan, mas lalong nagigipit yung mga kababayan natin. Mm-hmm. Kaya gusto ko yung dati na agrikultura ay gawa ng paraan ng ating gobyerno ng sagayon magkaroon ng suporta sa ekonomiya ng ating bansa.
Human Rights Watch joins calls for the Philippine government to immediately drop the drug cases against detained Senator Laila de Lima. This after self-confessed drug lord Kerwin Espinosa and former Corrections Bureau official Rafael Ragos recanted their allegations against the senator. The group says it's high time for Philippine authorities to release de Lima. It adds authorities should probe the claims of the two key witnesses. They were coerced to give false testimonies against the re-electionist senator. Two more areas placed under the control of the Philippine Pole Body due to security concerns. These are Misamis Occidental and Pilar Town in the province of Abra. Comelec Chairman Saidamen Pangarungan says the two areas have been riddled with election-related violence ahead of the polls. Several other towns and cities, including Marawi and Mindanao, had earlier been placed under Comelec control. The Philippine Health Department and the Pole Body will hold a simulation exercise on COVID management in preparation for the May 9 elections. Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergara says they want to ensure all health and safety protocols will be implemented on election day. These include ensuring proper ventilation and preventing crowding in polling centers.
Ang pinaka-protection natin, unang-una, sana bakunado tayong lahat. Ano? That's the number one protection. Second, and very important also, wear your well-fitted mask. Pag nag-mask tayo, alalahanin po natin maraming tao, isuot nyo po ng tama yung mask nyo, nakatakip sa ilong at bibig nyo. And pangatlo, mag-ugas lagi ng kamay. Huwag nyong hawakan yung mukha nyo kapag kayo humawak ng mga ginagamit ng maraming tao.
17 Filipinos who contracted COVID in Shanghai and China have been discharged from quarantine facilities, but 4 Filipinos exhibiting mild symptoms remain in isolation. The Chinese financial hub is now on week 4 of its strict lockdown. The Philippine Consul General says the strict lockdown also prevents Filipinos from casting their ballots for the 2022 elections.
As a matter of policy and principle, pinayagan po tayo ng Chinese government to na mag, yung lahat po ng ating mga konsulado sa China ay pinayagan. At ganoon din po sa Shanghai. Kumbaga, as to the voting itself, no, allowing us to hold elections, may pinapayagan po. Subalit ang kalaban po natin ay yung mga restrictions sa lockdown. Yung pong mismong lockdown, wala pa hong katiyakan, wala pong binibigay na check na pecha ano po, na tansya kung kailan kaya ma-ililift.
Overseas voting for Filipinos abroad will end on May 9th. The U.S. and its allies suspect Russian President Vladimir Putin could formally declare war on Ukraine by May 9th. Putin has only referred to Russia's invasion of Ukraine as a special military operation. A formal declaration of war would enable Putin to mobilize reserve forces and draft badly needed conscripts. May 9 is known as Victory Day in Russia as it commemorates the country's defeat of the Nazis in 1945. On the ground, Russian forces launch an offensive on the besieged steel plant in Mariupol, where Kyiv's forces are holed up. Ukraine's military says the assault is underway with support from armored vehicles and tanks and possibly even a large number of infantry by boat. The Russian army said on Tuesday its forces were using artillery and planes to target the plant where Ukrainian fighters are making their last stand. That's after Kyiv's forces were accused of using the POS in fighting to once again take up combat positions. 101 people were evacuated from the tunnels of the plant earlier this week, but Mariupol's mayor says 200 civilians remain there, while 100,000 are still trapped throughout the city. In other news, U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts orders a probe into a leaked draft opinion on abortion. On Monday, news outlet Politico published a document which suggests the conservative-dominated High Court was poised to strike down the Roe v. Wade decision, which legalized abortion in the country nearly 50 years ago. Several Republican lawmakers have accused liberals of orchestrating the leak in order to sway the opinion of justices. Roberts calls the breach an extraordinary violation of institutional protocol, but stresses it was not the SC's final decision on the matter. U.S. President Joe Biden warns the court overturning abortion rights would open the door to changing rulings on other issues.
If the rationale of the decision as released were to be sustained, a whole range of rights are in question. A whole range of rights. And the idea we're letting the states make those decisions, localities make those decisions, would be a fundamental shift in what we've done. So it goes far beyond, in my view, if it becomes a law and if what is written is what remains. It goes far beyond the concern of whether or not there is the right to choose. It goes to other basic rights.
Abortion is one of the most divisive issues in U.S. politics. Lawmakers in more than two dozen conservative states have prepared bills that would effectively outlaw it if the court overturns Roe v. Wade. But abortion is likely to remain legal in liberal states. Still ahead, local transport groups again call for a fare hike amid rising fuel prices. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. With more news, authorities vow to strictly implement President Rodrigo Duterte's order to put a stop to online cockfighting operations, or e-sabong, in the Philippines. The Interior Department says Duterte's order is effective immediately. A signed order will also finalize the cancellation of e-sabong franchises.
On the part of the DILG, Secretary Anyo already made a directive to the local government units and to the PNP. To work together to stop the operations of e-sabong. What are to be closed? The studios where the physical e-sabong is recorded for it to be live streamed. Number two, the betting stations that were authorized by the local government units. Those people who will be displaced by the e-sabong can just go back to the traditional face-to-face sabong. Actually, that's something that kami sa DILG, mas gusto namin yun, no? We would rather have the traditional sabong because these are held on definite times, no? And it's usually on a Sunday or during a holiday, and you don't get to bet 24 hours a day.
The Philippine Amusement and Gaming Corporation also vows to immediately follow the order and stop collecting revenues from e-sabong operations. Duterte previously resisted calls to shut down the controversial game, citing a loss of potential government revenue. But on Monday, he said e-sabong's negative social impact made him change his mind. Meanwhile, Vice Presidential candidate Senate President Vicente Soto III says it's about time that Isabong is shut down. He adds there are other ways government can generate revenue.
You're talking only of 640 million. There are 328 billion a year unused by the national government. From 2010 to 2020, average Luna, there was a time that it was about 450 billion. Barya po yung 640 million ng isabong compared dito sa unused by the national government. But if kami pa nga mag-i-implement ito, really, it will boil down and it will become a boil down to the upliftment of the poor.
Megawide bags the contract for two stations of the Metro Manila subway project. In a disclosure to the stock exchange, the construction firm said the notice of award from the Transportation Department is for the Ortigas North and Ortigas South underground stations. It is partnering with Tokyo Construction Company and Tobishima Corporation for the undertaking. The contract is part of the 34-kilometer underground railway, which will connect the north and the south of Manila with 17 stations. Once operational, the subway is expected to cut travel time from Quezon City to Naia to 35 minutes from 1 hour and 10 minutes. Local transport groups calling for a provisional increase in minimum fares in jeepneys and taxis amid high pump prices. Jeepney drivers want a 2 peso temporary hike in minimum fares. An earlier petition seeking to increase the minimum jeepney fare to 14 pesos from 9 pesos is still pending before the Land Transportation Franchising and Regulatory Board. Taxi operators also want a 20 peso increase in the current base fee of 40 pesos.
It's really due to the increase of the price of fuel. Kaya nga, 20 pesos lang on the flat down rate. Ang gusto nga nila is parang a temporary reprieve lang. Pag bumaba ulit yung price ng fuel, tatanggalin sa flat down rate.
The Philippine government has been distributing fuel subsidies to public utility drivers to help them cope with high pump prices. But some of them say they have yet to receive any aid. In sports, the Boston Celtics even up their second-round NBA playoff series with the defending champions Milwaukee Bucks. The Celtics got off to a jackrabbit start behind the 25-point first-half explosion of star wingman Jaylen Brown. Brown would finish with 30 points while Jason Tatum added 29 markers. As the Celtics won Game 2, 109-86, the series now shifts to Milwaukee for Games 3 and 4. Still on the NBA, Miami Heat scoring machine Tyler Hero has been named the league's top sixth man. Hero received 96 out of 100 first place votes to beat Cleveland's Kevin Love and Cam Johnson of Phoenix for the honor. He was the highest scoring sub in the regular season, averaging a career-high 20.8 points per game. He's the first Heat player to win the award. In entertainment, streaming giant Netflix cancels an animated series created by Meghan Markle. The announcement comes as Netflix makes cost-saving moves following disappointing first-quarter results. Markle and her husband, Britain's Prince Harry, signed a deal to produce content for the streaming platform after quitting their royal duties in Britain. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And before we go, former Justice Secretary Vitaliano Aguirre has broken his silence on allegations he pressured a witness into testifying on the alleged drug links of detained Senator Laila de Lima. In a statement, Aguirre says he was never involved in the alleged coercion of former Bureau of Corrections official Rafael Ragos. Ragos has retracted his earlier testimony, claiming he witnessed the delivery of drug money to de Lima. Aguirre questions the timing of Ragos's retraction, even claims de Lima stands to benefit from this development as she pushes her re-election bid. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.